Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. O King, when such a mystic passes over the Milky Way by the illuminating Shushumna to reach the highest planet, Brahmalok, he goes first to Vaishvanar, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes completely cleansed of all contaminations. And thereafter, he still goes higher to the circle of Shushumara to relate with Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. Purport, the polar star of the universe and the circle thereof is called Shushumara Circle. And therein, the local residential planet of the personality of Godhead, Kishora Dakshaya Vishnu, is situated. Before reaching there, the mystic passes over the Milky Way to reach Brahmalok, and while going there, he first reaches Vaishvanaralok, where the demigod controls fire. On Vaishvanaralok, the yogi becomes completely cleansed of all dirty sins acquired while in contact with the material world. The Milky Way in the sky is indicated herein as the way leading to Brahmalok, the highest planet of the universe. Om Agyante Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we have 27 minutes to speak a little bit. I'm just going to repeat the translation. O King, when such a mystic passes of the Milky Way by the illuminating Shushumna to reach the highest planet, Brahmalok, he goes first to Vaishvanara, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes completely cleansed of all contaminations, and thereafter he still goes higher to the circle of Shushumara to relate with Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. So we're continuing with a chapter on the Lord in the heart, and we are now walking with or going with the yogi who's perfected their yogic practice. And after perfecting their yogic practice, they're going on this very long, convoluted, it gets longer and more convoluted journey to connect with the Lord. It's difficult and arduous, even after perfection of yogic practice. You know, I've have had the unusual background, especially for Indians, because normally Indians, you know, families marry very similar, people of similar backgrounds, sometimes similar surnames, castes, etc. But I've had a bit of an unusual upbringing. My background is probably very mixed for an Indian, but they're all very religious. Actually, most are very religious. So on the one hand, we have these really austere Jains, You know, I mean, we even have Jain renunciates, and they, in Jainism, is about annihilation of your karma and liberation. There's no surrender to God. So the renunciation is really, really austere. I've seen it. I'm brought up around Jain gurus, and we have some, family members who take to this renunciate life, men and women. Then we have mystic gurus in the family as well, who can do all sorts of amazing things, but they've been distracted, usually by the opposite sex. And then we also have really wonderful Vaishnavas who live life very simply, unassuming. You wouldn't spot them in the street and think, wow, what an amazing devotee, but they dream of Krishna. And their deities speak to them. And if you heard some of their experiences in their spiritual life, you'd be blown away. Really, really blown away. So Prabhupada describes that for Vaishnavas, for the devotee, because we know who Krishna is already, you know, we have this wonderful seed of devotion given to us by the merciful Vaishnava. We already know Sambandha, Prayojana, Abhideya. We already know where we're going, why we're going, what the relationship is, who we're going to. And so he actually says that for a Vaishnav, this journey can be begun and completed within this very life, because this kripa, through watering it through the 9 processes of devotional service, we are growing it. We are nurturing it through our relationships, through our affection for each other, through our affection for Krishna. And as it grows, it reaches far high up and it pierces the material covering of this universe and reaches the lotus feet of Krishna, where it takes rest and then manifests and grows into the wonderful rasa that we have with Krishna. Now, you know, I was at a sangha a couple of weeks ago with Sutapa Prabhu, and this debate was brought up about did we leave? Did we turn away? Have we always been here? And I hadn't been involved in that kind of discussion for a long time. I thought this was one of those forgotten about topics, but I guess people still argue it and people still consider it. And so it's something I've not been thinking about too much, but thinking about a little bit, because it's true. How do you leave a space which is everywhere? Because, you know, the spiritual world is everywhere. We think about it linear, but actually it's everywhere. It's within our heart. It's around us. It's with all of you. Wherever Vaishnava is, Krishna is. So how do you leave a space which is everywhere? How do you leave a time that doesn't exist? And, you know, it's rather than looking at it intellectually, I thought, well, hang on a minute. Whether we've physically left Krishna, in time left Krishna, what we've definitely done, because our relationship with Krishna, as we were saying a few weeks ago, is really based on rasa. The spiritual world resonates to rasa. Everything happens because of relationship and emotion, right? Every service we want to do, every change in the spiritual world, the contraction and the expansion of Goloka Vrindavan, it's all by rasa, it's all by relationship, all by feeling. And what is the best way to create space? What is the best way to separate by time? What is the best way to never give thought to another person? Is when you kill off your feelings for them. So actually, when we turn away from Krishna, we're switching off our feelings for him. That is what we're doing. But because we are made up, every atom and molecule of our very self is made up of our love for Krishna, we have to bury it deep. We have to bury it deep under thick, thick layers of false ego, thick layers of intelligence, thick layers of the mind, the thick layers of the 5, you know, elements. And so it goes deep. And we go through many, many lifetimes of experiencing so many different things. Some we experience fully, some we just get a glimpse of. So this turning away from Krishna, think about it. You know, even in this lifetime, when we either bury or cut off our feelings from someone, you could be in the same space and it's like you're 1,000 miles apart, right? You could be in the same room and you don't spare a thought for them, isn't it? Because you have no feeling for them, and you have no time for them. And so when we have no feeling for Krishna, do we spare a thought for him? Do we have feelings for him? Do we have time for him? space. I mean, we can be standing in front of the deity. Krishna's literally right there. Krishna's within our heart. But we create that big space because we've killed off our feelings, or at least we've buried them deep. And, you know, Krishna resonates this. Actually, he tells us very clearly, what is the essence of Bhagavad Gita? Manmana, always think of me, right? Pavamad bhakto, become my devotee. So always think of me means never forget me, because where there's always, I mean, Krishna's there in every single moment. He is time, right? So always think of me, never forget me. Become my devotee. Have feeling for me, right? How do we devote? Devotion is a feeling from the heart. And when we are immersed in devotion, then only thoughts which are consistent with that devotion will manifest, right? When you have feeling for someone, anyone, whether it's your child, your family member, anything, even if it's anger, right? When you have the feeling of anger, only thoughts consistent with that anger come up, right? You can't think of anything else. When fear comes up in the heart, the only thoughts that you have are fearful ones. When there's love there, right? When we're immersed in loving feelings for Krishna, then we will always think of him, even with this material mind, because only thoughts which are favorable and consistent with that feeling will occur. So, but for us in trying to, as devotees, turn back towards him, right, saying, I want to switch on my feelings again. I want to feel those things again. I want to feel for you again. I've absorbed myself in so many things here. Let me feel that absorption for you again, where it feels so compulsive and so overwhelming that I have no control over it. You know, we've all had some experience of that, feelings that are so compulsive, so overwhelming, you can't control yourself. So these distractions, actually, Srila Gurudev, in his last few weeks on the planet, we would have discussions, you know, about the mind and the nature of the relationship between us, Krishna, the mind and the body, but in a very different way. And I remember him saying, you know, Chidi Shakti, normally when you leave the body, the mind and intelligence, they don't give you so much trouble, because they're thinking, okay, it's okay. Body's going to die, but we'll get another, you know, we'll get another chance in the next body. And then we'll have our fun. We'll form your next body and help you, you know, fulfill all your desires. It's all right. We'll get our turn. We're not dying. So when it's your final birth, when it's your final birth, Maya, using your mind, your intelligence, everything that is there in your mind, lays out every single card on the table. Every single opportunity you could possibly have available to you in this universe becomes apparent. You know, people often talk about how when you're leaving your body, your life flashes before your eyes, right? Everything. And you wonder, how can a whole lifetime flash before my eyes in just a few seconds? And he's saying, yeah, you know, everything is presented to you. Right now, in this lifetime, we are presented things in dribs and drabs, right? Bit by bit. Sometimes things surprise us, sometimes we know they're lurking. But he said, when you're leaving and it's your final time, everything, one by one. And he said, and you have to say no to every single one and yes to Krishna every single time. And it's interesting because Bhagavad Gita 8:6, Krishna guarantees Arjuna. He says, whatever state one remembers when quitting the body, that state you shall attain without fail. But we're always dying. We're dying from the moment we're born. What's death? Death is a change of the body. Death is a change of the mind, right? So as our mind and body change every day, every year, every month, sometimes we don't even notice these changes. Do you remember the changes your body took place when you were a teenager or a baby? I don't remember them. They must have happened. I don't remember it. And yet it happened. But there's some changes we really, really remember. We become quite destabilized. Change is probably one of the hardest things, and it is the most stressful thing. You know, it's one of the biggest triggers also for mental health problems, is change. And that can be a good change, an unwanted change. The number of people I've met whose mental health problem has been triggered by It's not a joke, getting married. Not because this thing is, oh my God, getting married is terrible, but because it's a change. It's a huge life change, you know? Moving house. People want to move house usually. They're celebrating. Changing jobs. Simple things, things that we desire. So change is very, very difficult for us. So we're going through this change. And as we're going through these changes, it shakes up our subtle body. It shakes up our mind. So, you know, our mind, 90% of it's not even consciously available to us. Only 10%. 10% conscious mind, 90% of it is subconscious, unconscious. It's like the deep, dark depths of the ocean, right? You never can predict really what's going to come up from the ocean, right? And in our ocean of our mind, we are carrying lifetimes of impressions. But even if we forget the previous lifetimes, even in this lifetime, we've got so many memories, so many experiences, and we've forgotten many of them. Some of them we didn't, actually most of them we didn't even pay attention to. You know, maybe this is a point I keep repeating, but it's so, I think it's such a helpful thing to understand. Even when we don't pay attention, everything is leaving an impression. Okay? So in this room, so many of us, we all have so many thoughts, we all have so many feelings. There are so many. Should rather Google than the key J, rather than the key J. There are so many things we can see with our eyes. There are so many sounds we could hear. There are so many fragrances in the air. So many sensations touching our body, right? Maybe so many tastes as well. And we're focusing. We're zoning in on what we want to hear, what we want to see, what we want to taste, what we want to smell, and what we want to touch. But that doesn't mean the rest of it isn't having an impact. It all has an impact. It gets laid down. This is what sanskara means, impression, right? So even when we're not paying attention, in fact, often it's a thing when things we're not paying attention to that can have a profound impact. I mean, Krishna's saying it right here. Whatever state one thinks of, that state you shall attain. We're always thinking of something, so that is going to influence what state we're attaining immediately. Okay, so all of these different distractions we are being made aware of throughout our life, sometimes predictably, sometimes unpredictably. Actually, it's Prabhupada's been very kind to us, more kind than we can even imagine by making these books available. We were on, you know, we have this sangha where we study a variety of books, and we've been studying Beggar 2, which is prayers to the spiritual master, by Bhaktisiddhanta Swami. And Meditation 6, in Meditation 6, Srila Prabhupada takes Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj to the upper planetary systems, to the middle planetary systems, lower planetary systems, and tells him to just simply listen and observe. And then they go to the spiritual world. And again, Prabhupada says, simply listen and observe. It's like they take a whirlwind tour through all of creation. And there's so much in there. We had a whole 2-hour session, but I would just give one, you know, one thing that really stood out to me. Is, you know, sometimes people read prayers like that and think, oh, did Prabhupada actually take Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj to all of these places? You know, or is this kind of like a descriptive, event? Is this just a meditation? What actually happened? Because what Maharaj is describing is that everywhere he went, he saw that people were busy eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Just in different varieties. And some of the places were so amazing, he didn't want to leave. He was like, can we stay here a bit longer? So, but then they got to the spiritual world. And again, everybody's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He said, but the difference was, it was all for the pleasure of the divine couple. Eating wasn't because we were hungry. It was to, you know, engage in those pastimes of cooking and serving. It was amazing. And he was describing how, you know, all of his senses were interchangeable and were lit up with ecstasy. He couldn't contain himself. Anyway, the prayer ends with, you know, Prabhupada just saying, you know, you won't have understood everything you've seen fully, but I want you to really simply listen and observe. You know, it was all about the gurus, about listen and observe. If you listen and observe, you will see a lot more than what's visible, right? You can look at an acorn. It just looks like a seed. But if you really look at an acorn, you'll see it grows into a big oak tree. Right? So shastras like that, gurus like that, one small thing actually contains the entire spiritual world, and it contains all of that feeling that we've cut off from Krishna. So one realization I had from that particular prayer is that Srila Prabhupada in his books has taken us on this whirlwind tour. So this yogi has had to perfect their yoga practice to be able to go through all these planetary systems, see them, experience them, and eventually reach Krishna and not even have prem. But we, through Prabhupada's books, because you look at the verses in Bhagavatam versus the purports in Bhagavatam, right? How much more does Prabhupada give us? You know, he gives us, it's like he takes us by the hand through the entire material world and the spiritual world, and he's saying, look, simply listen and observe. Oh, and then there's this extra detail, and this is what's attractive here, and this is what's unattractive. So it's amazing, you know, we have so much given to us to, as our creeper grows, as it pierces the material covering, as it eventually takes rest at Krishna's lotus feet, we have an opportunity to really see, well, I don't need to wait until the moment I leave this body to have this. Prabhupada's saying I can have it in this lifetime if I simply remember that Maya is going to offer me everything she possibly can as an alternative. Some things in this universe, some things I haven't thought of yet. But you know, the thing with the unconscious and subconscious mind, even though it's unpredictable, is that it can be transformed, can be changed. Okay, this is this concept of samskara, impression. And in 270, Krishna talks about how somebody who's peaceful can tolerate, I was undisturbed by the incessant flow of desires, right, in the mind, like rivers into the ocean. The ocean still stays still. So somebody who's peaceful, we're at peace with the fact that, okay, yeah, sometimes something will come up from the unconscious, either while I'm asleep or awake. Sometimes it comes from the subconscious. Sometimes it's there in the conscious. Sometimes it's unexpected. Sometimes it's nice. Sometimes it's really gross. Sometimes somebody else draws it out. And then on top of that, you've got everybody else's stuff. But we are undisturbed. We're undisturbed because we have been given a process. We can either take some thoughts and purify them, get rid of them altogether through the process of japa, through hearing, reading, or we can give them a healthy voice. We can transform them. I know a few weeks ago we had this whole discussion where we were talking about the framework of varna and ashram. So varna, ashram, modes, they give us a healthy voice for these incessant desires, right? Krishna explains that if you keep satisfying the desires, that's not going to make you peaceful. But he also gives us a framework within them being permissible, but also transformation, be able to be transformed. And in that framework, we were talking about how our relationships with each other and our relationships within ashrams and between the ashrams help us to stay on this climbing frame, back to Godhead. Okay, back to Krishna's lotus feet, back to those, that intense feeling for him. But whenever you're climbing something high, what do you wear? You wear a harness, right? Anybody who's been abseiling, mountain climbing, you wear a harness. Because you can slip off the climbing frame or the mountain or climbing wall at any time. And for us, our harness is our harness is made up of the ropes of the nine processes of devotional service. Okay? With the relationship with the spiritual master at the core. Because our relationship with Guru is the catalyst for how deeply and how much we can really understand and connect with those nine processes. And then it means that if our foot slips, or we end up in the wrong part of the frame, you know, framework, it doesn't matter. We're caught. Okay, and we can get back on. The frame's never going to catch us, is it? But the harness will catch us because it's tethered to us very, very strongly. So just coming back to what Bhaktisiddhartha Maharaj was saying about that all your cards are laid on the table, all these incessant desires, every opportunity you have is given to you in one go because you don't have many lifetimes anymore to have to experience them. And then they're sitting there in the unconscious mind. These nine processes, how do we change our actions? It has to start with desire, right? Because every action starts with desire. How do we change our desire? We change our desire simply by what we're exposed to. It's that simple. We can't desire something we don't know about. How many of us wanted Krishna until we heard about who Krishna was? Right? We didn't. How many of you ever wanted a piece of chocolate until you knew what chocolate was?
Any of you who've raised children, you know that. It's very easy. You hear so many mums, oh, they're really proud of the fact that their two-year-old doesn't eat chocolate. But their two-year-old's never had chocolate. You know, like, wait till they're five. Wait till they're five. Then they'll be after chocolate all the time. You know, because they've been exposed. So as we expose ourselves, even if it's inattentively, if sometimes you're thinking, I'm not feeling this process. Because when we're not feeling it, right, we don't want to engage with it. We're so conditioned to, I've got to be feeling it to do it. But that is the time when we have to do it the most. So even if you're not attentive, even if you don't feel like going, just go. Because whatever nine process of devotional service you're engaging with, there is going to be a shift, an impression, something absorbed, something laid down, unconscious, subconscious. And then eventually when you replace all of those material experiences and material impressions, the only thing that comes in your conscious mind is bhakti. Okay, and it's really powerful because this whole thing of being able to say no to all those cards that are laid on the table and yes to Krishna every single time is all based on our desire for serving and loving Krishna. And this question came up as well. It comes up, well, how do we make sure that we're not desiring or attached to anyone or anything else and only to Krishna? It's not a case of only. Because we will always have many connections, many desires and many attachments. That will always be there, okay, because there's an opportunity for it. But it's about degree of desire, right? Anybody who's ever been to Govinda's in Mayapur, their menu is extensive, okay? It's long. And if you're hungry, you could get confused and bewildered. What do I order? And you have this incessant flow of desires. I don't know what to have, right? Oh my God, I could have the whole menu. And the thing is, though, it's about degree of desire. There will be something that your mind, your stomach, your taste buds will rest on. I'm going to order that because degree of desire is strongest for that one dish, right? So our spiritual life is really about, because we keep our relationships in this world, they're just different in the spiritual world. You know, if you feel like you're missing out on a relationship with someone in this lifetime, don't worry, you'll have it at some point in the spiritual world and it'll be even sweeter. So it's about developing a degree of feeling for Krishna, which is so intense and so strong that even when other desirables are presented to us, even other affections are presented to us, then we still choose that, spontaneously choose that affection for Krishna. So that's why Krishna says, you know, if you think of me, you'll come to me. Because when all our cards are laid on the table, whether it's today, whether it's at the end of this life, we choose Krishna because we say, okay, I don't want to bury my feelings for you deep anymore. I want to feel you and I want to feel for you and know you as a person. So I'll stop there. Discussion, comments, corrections, complaints. Forgive me if the class was too basic. Anyone? Would you like to say something, elaborate? Such a, you know, Krishna consciousness, there's so many things to say. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Do we have a mic? Prabhu, 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 Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, thank you for the class. And it's basics is a very good thing, actually, because there's very nice verses in Bhagavad Gita. It's 14:22-25, and it talks about the observation by becoming detached and neutral in all situations.
Can you hold the mic a little higher?
Sorry, it talks about, I haven't got my glasses on, but anyway, I'll do my best. It says here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Partha, one who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they are disappear, who is unwavering, undisturbed through all these, the reactions of the material qualities remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated alike in happiness and distress, who is looks upon a lump of earth, a piece of gold, as equal to one eye, who is equal towards the desirable and undesirable. But just to really to cap that is that when they say equal, the only person who can do that is one who is using everything in Krishna's service. So if we have that idea...
Sorry, Mike,
that,
can you put the mic back with me?
Sorry, and we have that idea that actually everything's used in Krishna's service, you become equipoised. Mm. Because praise and blame, all these things, they're for our benefit. For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, I'm never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So it's a matter of just seeing Krishna in everything, but utilizing everything in Krishna's service, and not have aversion to it, because everything's coming from Krishna anyway.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be too concerned about the things that are happening. You can become detached because you're using everything in Krishna's service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a basic principle of that verse 9:27 too. Yat karoshi yadasi yadosi tadasi ya. Seeing everything as an act of worship.
Mm.
Whatever you do, just treat it as an act of worship for Krishna. And that is that neutrality, because everything's there. We feel things, you know. There's no doubt about it. We have feelings, but we observe them.
Yeah.
That actually Krishna's behind this.
Yeah.
You know, so that's neutrality as I see it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. That's beautiful. Everything's a love offering. And if we don't love Krishna, then we won't love everything that he has created or produced. We will have attachments and aversions, but everything will be used for Krishna. It doesn't matter how much, even in the framework of the modes, everything can be used. There is no modes for somebody who's transcendental. Anyone else?
Hi, Krishna.
Hi, Krishna.
Thank you for a beautiful class, Mataji. So, reflecting on what you've said about Krishna and falling in love with Krishna, and so I think I have a bit of a problem falling in love with Krishna.
Me too.
I must be honest. I mean, I can see Krishna's beauty, feel his beauty almost. I can appreciate his kindness, his magnanimity. Krishna is great, he's a chief living entity, and all these things. He's wonderfully merciful. Why can't I understand these things? Why is it I can't embrace Krishna in love? That's my problem, I think.
I have the same problem, so, you know, let's be in rehab together. Our problem is because we've buried it deep. That's what it is. You know, Krishna, when he talks about the eight elements, including the ego, the intelligence, and the mind, the more subtle the elements, the thicker that layer is, right? So our need for this, you know, this effortless peak of happiness, our fabric of ourselves of being loved, to love others, for connection, it's so inherent in all of us, but we've gotten so conditioned to trying to find it outside that even we hear a lot about, actually, we won't find it fully outside. It can be a stepping stone, but it's not the ultimate destination. That conditioning is so strong. I mean, Arjuna asked Krishna the same thing. Why is it that even when I know the right thing to do, I still don't do it? You know, why is it? It's like I'm compelled by some other force. So this conditioning takes time to break out of. It's like we've lost our memory. You know when somebody gets amnesia after a bump on the head? What do you do to revive their memory? You show them pictures of their family, their job, their past relationships. You take them to those places. Anything that will evoke not their memory, because neurologically, okay, if you're looking at the neurological side of memory, that's shot to pieces. Because your frontal lobe shot to pieces because of injury or whatever's happened. You've had a stroke. What they're trying to invoke is emotion. Because that emotion brings back the memory. So even in dementia patients, right? They may, in dementia, you lose your actual cognitive memory. People even forget who their relatives are. They're there. Their sons and daughters come in crying, weeping, saying, oh my God, you know, my mother doesn't recognize me anymore. She thinks I'm her granddad or whoever she thinks I am. It's distressing for them. But when they keep coming, I say, keep going. I said, because she has an emotional memory of you. And if they stay, they may be called the wrong thing or the wrong name, but they feel great solace from these visits, both of them, when they eventually can. So this, everything Prabhupada's given us, everything Krishna's given us, all these pastimes that we read, they are our pastimes with Krishna. We are there somewhere. We just don't know who yet. Okay, who am I in that pastime yet? We will know one day, and then we'll be overwhelmed with feeling. First in little bits like tuning a television or a radio, you know, at least the olden day one. You have to go little by little. First it's just a little bit of clarity, and then the picture stays a little bit longer, then you fine tune it and the picture's clear. So this conditioning is easily undone by living in reality. How do you come out of illusion? You live in reality. So reading and hearing is so important. It's not just a, oh, this is one of our processes of sadhana bhakti. It makes it sound so dry. No, I'm going back to read the memories of my real life. Hearing about the memories of my real life. And then we start living in our real life. So it'll come. But we're all in rehab together. And yeah, I like being in rehab with all of you. Anyone else, or do we have to stop?
Yes.
Can we send the mic over there, please?
Thank you very much, Adishakri. I wanted to ask that at the time when all your cards are in front of you, can you share your thoughts in the sense of, are you going to have a complete awareness of your relationship with Krishna and pure love for Krishna, or a balance or a mixture of emotions or impressions of how bad it is in the material life, which is leading to an aversion and drawing you to Krishna?
If you're talking about the final birth, I'm going based on what Gurudev shared. I mean, he, at that same time, he was also sharing that beyond the material madness, he was experiencing a transcendental madness. So clearly a stage where he was aware of feelings, forms, and relationship with Krishna. And you know, we often talk about how we're flying this plane on our own. We all have to fly our own plane, but we're all flying our own plane. So there's many planes alongside us. There's some behind us. There's some ahead of us. And then there's, you know, the parampara and those who are rooting for us in the control tower, directing us, right? If we're not that alone, okay. So at that point, so Maharaj is talking about it, you know, he was very conscious about it being the last time because he's experiencing his transcendental madness. But even for us, where we are reaching those final moments where these wonderful devotees are petitioning on our behalf and getting Krishna Prema ready for us to take then, we still have to accept it. You know, someone can offer you gold, but if you don't want to take it, you don't have to. You know, and we were, you know, Gurudev was quite open. Not publicly open, but in when we'd serve him in terms of, especially if you served him closely for a considerable period of time, you'd see that as like with many spiritual masters, some of the disciples leave before them. And he would spend a long time in prayer after anybody would leave, petitioning on their behalf. And occasionally, he would comment that there was an opportunity for somebody to be with Krishna, but they chose something else along the way, even though they were offered it. So yeah, it's, we can be offered Krishna Prem even in this lifetime, but have we chosen to take a detour elsewhere? And as you can see, there are many detours that we can take. So, but we don't have to wait till the moment of death. I think that's what Gurudev was trying to point out, that don't wait to have this at the moment of death. You know, and Prabhupada's saying within this lifetime before you leave, you can do your world tour of the material universe, say bye to everything and rest at Krishna's lotus feet. I don't know if we've got time for more questions. Are we allowed more questions? We are. There's two more. Okay, so I will follow your instruction. This Prabhuji and Mataji want... You can speak to me after? Okay, Prabhuji, I can take your question.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you very much for your nice class. I have a question about remembrance and forgetfulness. When I come to the temple, I remember Krishna. When I go home, I forget Krishna. And it's getting even worse when you get old. And I find it difficult. So how you can remember Krishna in the outside world? Because when you go out from the temple's door, you start forgetting. So could you elaborate that point, please?
Not speaking about you here, but just generally reflecting on myself. If we are still at a stage where we need to be having a physical reminder of Krishna, to think of him, that's not a bad stage to be at or a wrong stage. It's a stage, but it shows us that we're not fully there. We want to get to a stage where those things that we're doing that do remind us of Krishna, we're able to carry them with us when we walk away. Right? So, for example, we may leave the temple room after looking at Radha Gokulananda, but how much of the impression of their image are we carrying in our mind and heart? And that's going to fuel us for the rest of the day. And some of this is practice. Some of this is practice. We can be out there in the big wide world doing so many things. And if you break up your day, you can have reminders even when you're outside. But as your affection for either those activities or the source of those activities, particularly guru, I mean, this is why guru-disciple relationship is so powerful, because for much of our Krishna consciousness, Krishna, especially in the beginning, is an abstract concept. He hasn't yet become a person for us. But guru is a person. So if we don't yet have affection or memory of Krishna with this mind everywhere we go, then at least remember the Vaishnavas. At least remember guru, because that's as good as. Because it's by guru's grace that we remember Krishna. Because actually thinking of Krishna ultimately doesn't happen in the mind. It happens from the real self, and it's already there. We use the mind to remember Krishna, and ultimately when the mind's purified, it is only full of thoughts of Krishna. But it's difficult to artificially impose it. Even Krishna resides in the mind by his own will. That's why when you look at from the stages from Shraddha to Prem, and we go from Vaidhi Bhakti to Raganuga Bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service in practice, to then spontaneous devotional service, Bhav and Prem, that transitional point of Raganuga Bhakti in practice, it still requires us, so you might have the spark of affection for Krishna, but we still have to train the mind. And when we train the mind, when we read the books about Raga, like you can read more elaborations on it in, for example, Shiva Maharaj has written, Shuddh Bhakti in Chintamani, it's there in Nectar of Devotion, that we can never artificially impose Krishna in our mind. He has to come there by his mercy. So knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, yes, comes from Krishna. So even knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness of him comes from him. So keep going. I'm sure whatever you're doing is wonderful.
Thank you. I will try continue, but also I feel it's even harder being deaf. But yeah, I'll keep going. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You know that turning point, Prabhuji? That turning point can come at any time. But it usually comes from pleasing very exalted souls. So try and get the association of pure devotees. Because when they bestow that wish upon you, then that moment happens like this. We clear so much. Honestly, association with pure devotees is the secret of our success. It works every time. You'll see. You'll make advancement of leaps and bounds within a moment. So if there's one thing that's missing, do it. Hare Krishna. I think we have to stop there in consideration of the cleaners. Hare Krishna, thank you so much.